Welcome to Essential Leadership Skills, the broadcast. Today, we're thrilled to host Atlas Altman, a number one best-selling author in leadership, motivation, and more, and a standout speaker from TEDx Talks to the Great American Speak-Off TV show. Atlas's journey from leading elite teams in special operations and war zones to sharing stages worldwide offers a unique blend of experience, humor, and wisdom. Join us as Atlas shares invaluable lessons from his nearly three decades of leadership in the most challenging environments. Get ready for an episode filled with insights that promise to inspire and transform your approach to leadership. Welcome, Atlas, to the conversation.
This is a Touchstone Publishers presentation, your trusted source of leadership knowledge.
Good morning, all. Good morning. I love when I get a chance to talk to a best-selling author because that's what I strive for, to get there. And after six books, I'm still not there yet, but we have a speaker, we have a guest with us today, as he was introduced by Malcolm, who's done that, who also did a TEDx. So I've done that. We have that in common. That's about it. But I'm striving to get to where you get to, where you are right now. Welcome and good morning, Atlas.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. We've been talking about this for a while, and it's so good to see your face and talk to you now.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a battle between my health and your schedule. I guess if you're going to be writing books, you can't be on the podcast all the time. It takes some time to write.
It doesn't. It does.
Yeah, it does. I want to ask you a question that we hadn't discussed. When I was going through your materials, I wanted to see your books, your LinkedIn pages, other things. I just wanted you to maybe take a moment and tell us, what is it about your organization that's unique?
Yeah, unique is every business should be out there to help somebody. Mm-hmm. And what I find is a lot of people, especially if they don't make it, they start a business to make money. And my whole approach is about bettering people. And I do it, as most people do, out of my own pocket so that I can pay to show that I can help you. And whenever that happens, it's amazing what my company can change into and morph and then bring other excellent people into helping other people. So my company is founded out of military roots. I knew nothing but the military until I became an entrepreneur about 3 years ago. Okay. And I took the military lessons. And I get asked this question a lot. How does your military world and lesson fold into my life? And as leadership is leadership, it doesn't matter where it came from, but everyone has a unique style and we help them develop that. I used to say, it's like your voice, right? Your voice and your dictation and what you say all changes with time based off of your experience, your wins and your losses. And if you're doing that, you get to push that into someone else's environment so that they can become more like them. We do that in our company. We create a voice for you so that it's not cracky, it's confident. It takes out all of the pauses you don't want in there. And it makes you a better leader because it's for you, not a blanket for everyone else. I see a lot of people in my space doing, this works for everybody. And that's just not something we believe in my company. So that's what makes it a little different.
You know what I was wondering and noticed? There was a spot in everybody's journey who becomes a thought leader like yourself where they make a pivot, where they change what they're doing. They start saying, okay, here's what I'm going to do to make a difference. Now, speakers, this is one thing, I'm not downplaying TEDx because we've both done them. Yes. And they can be powerful. We've run into some powerful TEDx talks like yours and Simon Sinek's, people like that. But for the most part, those are like keynotes that are not really designed to help anybody. They're just there to create questions. So I'm wondering about what point was it in the military or post-military where you made a decision that had a profound impact on your organization's direction? And what were some of those key insights that led to that or experiences?
If you're paying attention, you're going to grab some clues. People are going to say, hey, Glenn, that's amazing. How many people have you told this? Or do you share this? Can you tell my team, organization, event the same thing you just said? Because man, that just hit me. And I understand it differently. I had a lot of those moments. I had a lot of those moments in my military career.
Okay.
That's what really pivoted me into doing this. I had people say, hey, you should definitely be on stages to share this. One of the biggest lessons that I ever learned was I was telling a story about President Obama. I was on his military team doing communications as a personal aide for President Obama. And so that made me right on the sidelines of history, made me be right there. And I got to see a lot of the things that he did. And one of the stories that I used to tell people that were coming up behind me was, hey, when you're there, take it all in, because it's definitely something you can see change and transform. And the story I always told them, and it got me on a national stage, right, was President Obama was walking into a room, and I went in there before him, and there was a man in a wheelchair. And I didn't think anything of it. I looked on the schedule and I saw that he had a meet and greet, but I didn't realize it was this man. And when the president walked in, he said to this man, he goes, "Hello, young man." And immediately this guy's shoulders, they just rocked back, and he put his chest out, and the wrinkles that were on his face disappeared and were replaced by this giant smile. It's because a recognized leader recognized this man. And you don't have to be the president of the United States to have that impact. And that's what I used to tell people. I'm like, you coming in and saying something positive changes the environment, because if you're an actual leader, they're listening. And he was a master at that. And that's just one example I got to witness, him changing the whole environment. And you can do that too.
I've noticed that has happened a lot. And I had a guest a couple of weeks ago who was saying, basically, if you went out and practice as a leader, making somebody feel good.
Yes.
Down from the busboy at a restaurant. And she was saying that she would make a point to get the busboy full attention.
That's powerful.
And that's just what you said. Here's the leader of the free world.
Yeah.
Reaching out to someone who needed that at that moment.
Yes, so, for sure.
But something I noticed, though, it seemed like to me that you didn't have just one moment that was pivotal. No. The balance scale balanced and went that way.
Yeah. When you're young, you don't pay attention as much as you do when you get a little bit of experience. You're like, about this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I might have done this a little earlier.
Yeah, exactly. We've been doing it for a while, and it's just like, wait a minute, I could have been much better off had I hired a CEO earlier in life than what I did. But these type of things, those are the points. I like that. I want to ask you about this book, though, that you wrote.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you, I put it up on the screen because it's a powerful book. I just skimmed it. I haven't read it all the way through yet. So I'll be honest with you, but it's good. But on your journey to becoming this bestseller, I'm curious as to how you, when you're putting this together and you're writing it, your leadership philosophy influenced this. So how does this influence organizations? How do they grab this and start to say, okay, no, that's, I can put that in my organization. You have two or three points we'll talk about later on that we're implementing right away. I think that's why our CEO got so involved with this podcast, because she started reading it. So can you tell us a little bit about how your journey was to creating this bestseller?
Yeah, this book there, when I told the Air Force, hey, I'm going to go ahead and separate. I've become a senior leader. I was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and I had done command multiple times, and I had led at all the levels that I wanted to lead at, and I hit all the targets I wanted to hit in my career. And that included a bunch of very high-ranking people. Like, the President of the United States was definitely a highlight. But I had worked for 4-star generals when I first came in. I had worked for 3-star generals, all these high level offices. I got to be around them and see things. And every time I saw something, I would write it down in these little notebooks that I still carry around. Right? I got one right here. And I've written down a couple things just from when we were talking earlier. What I do is I put those little nuggets in there, and then I'll revisit them every year. And I do a year in review, and I put all these years together. And I started looking at it, and I was like, this is a lot of great military leadership. Wait a minute. This is a lot of great leadership. Wait a minute. This is a lot like what people are trying to teach but haven't really perfected. And I had been through a lot of leadership schools in the military. They put you through one about every 2 to 3 years. So I had been through everything that's mainstream leadership, and I noticed they were missing the mark on some things. And when I started putting my notes together with what I had written down, I was like, I got to put this out as a book. So I did what everyone does, right? I'm not sure if you did this, Glenn. I pushed it out to my community, my friends and my close colleagues. I said, hey guys, what do you think about this? Just if you want to give it a quick read. And they were like, this is good. This is really good. Hey, I know an editor at so-and-so. Can I connect you? And I'm like, sure. And then that ended up being an editor at Harvard Business Review. And so I sent my book out to Harvard. And then I heard Dave Goggins get on and say, hey, don't let anybody publish your book. They'll own you. And I was like, I don't want to be owned. So I pulled it back from all the people I was talking to, and I started the whole journey. But the lessons are all from my career. And the way I structured it was very to the point. If you want to read my book, Glenn, you don't have to read the stories of like when I got accused of stealing a Secret Service vehicle and they told me that I was going to go to jail. Those are stories that are just meant to be entertaining. And I talk about biases that we all have in that story specifically, but I go through and I summarize everything at the end of the chapter. So you can read my book in 5 minutes and you can take it and apply it immediately. And I'm not even going to tell your audience exactly how to apply it, because I talk about this all the time. My niche is decision making for leaders.
Yes.
Everyone has their own models. There's a OODA loop that was created by Boyd: observe, orient, decide, and act. That's a very famous Air Force military decision cycle. Most people like to gather all the information in the who, what, where, when, and why. And then if you're really fancy, how. So those six things will give you all the information you need to make a good decision. I found that the very elite level leader doesn't have time to look at all the stuff that most people think that they would. They employ people that are experts on their team to do all of that math. And then they bring the solutions and they say, which one do you want? And so you pick the best solution as a higher level leader. And that looks like life. So when faced with a problem, you get three things that everyone looks at. The first one is if it's money dependent and you're really worried about your budget, you're going to look at how much it costs. So that's your how, right?
Yeah.
If you need it done immediately, like you need to get somewhere, you're going to look at when. How much time is it going to take? When can it be done? And then you're going to find somebody that can do it. And what I found is to make better decisions, you flip the script and you start looking at who can do it first. And then you ask them, how much time is this going to take? How much money do you need? And you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised that it costs less money and it gets done quicker because you're asking the right person instead of doing it the opposite way and then finding out the person you hired wasn't the right person to begin with.
I tell you what, that kind of really resonated with me because I think you gave all of us find people who are going to do the job.
That's right.
And then you can, first thing is going to get done better. Love that. Love the practical tips of the book. I wonder if you could talk just a little bit more about the book. I'm going to keep you there on the book for a second. But how can we effectively, this is change the subject in a way, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Because if we're looking for the right person right away, how do we effectively measure and improve our employees?
Yeah,
to get them to be engaged, to get them satisfaction, to drive productivity. How do we do that?
You got to do that. You got to start. Every day is a new start for that whole problem. So I'm with you on that. In the book, I actually put a chapter in there to self-assess yourself. And what I'm going to do for your audience is not only am I going to show them the steps that I took to become a best-selling author, that can be for your audience only. I charge for that, but I'm going to give it to you. So I'll put that on my website and I'll send you the link. But I'll give you that 9-step process to become a bestseller. The other part that you just asked about is how do I emplace this excellent body of team members and organizational excellence inside? And it starts with you. So whenever you get something complex, you used to get an owner's manual. So whenever I would get like a TV So I put a leadership owner's manual in my book and I went through like how you do that. And it takes care of all the rumor control, all the things that you are going to be rumored against, like where you grew up, if you're married, if you have kids, what your priorities are. You go through all of that and then you give that to people immediately. So they know who you are. They're not talking about you. They just start working because they know who you are. You just told them. That's in my book.
Let me just ask a question so you can coach me a little bit. Are you talking about creating like a bio for yourself and writing it down and printing it and giving it to your team?
Yeah, that means that's important. Everyone does that. So every executive that you have on the C level and above for corporations, or if you're in the military, the very top levels, they all have bios that you can go out and you can see where they're from. Nobody reads that. So whenever you take a leadership position or you're taking yourself into a new company, and what I used to do is when I had new people come on a team, I'd give them the same brief. It's no longer than 5 minutes. And it says, this is who I am. I was raised this way. This is where I'm from. I went to these schools. Who cares? This is what I'm about. I'm a morning person, so I don't operate too well in the morning unless I have a cup of coffee. But then I'm a morning person, right? Then I like to read, so I'm going to reference books. I like quotes. These are the things I like, right? These are the things I don't like. If you're going to be illegal, immoral, unethical, if you're going to be biased in any way that you don't understand, if I tell you about the bias and it doesn't go away, we're going to have problems. These are things that are core to me, and that's how I operate. So as a leader, this is how I need you to work with me so that you can operate me so I can remove those roadblocks, but also find out what you're passionate about and fuel it. I need to figure out what you're good at so that I may not have hired you for the right thing, but if you fit on my team for something else, I'm going to move you. And I did that quite often in the military, but that's a whole thing. So the leadership is like finding out who you are before you start to lead, because people see when you're faking it, when you're trying to be somebody you're not. They see through that. They're not stupid. And they know that's not you. That's fake. So I have that model in my book. But for your audience, I made it simpler. I made it a one-pager, because that's what you get now.
Yeah.
And it's not a bio. It's deeper than that, because it's graphical, right? So I have a picture of me, and I have like my brain and my heart. And it's just, it's interesting little dialogue. And then anything that I did, like love languages, recommend you do love languages, your five love languages. How do they work?
Wow.
And how does your teams work? And anagrams, like who are you personality-wise? Like we had a team member that was one of the commanders that I was coaching in my last job, and he was always like attacking people, seemingly. He was just really interested in data. And we didn't know until we did the test that he is a data person and not like a heartfelt feeling person like the rest of us.
Yeah, well, that's conflict. If you don't have those anagrams down, it's conflict. I really believe in that. What you got me, though, on was the love languages. That's something I would not have considered ever teaching. Tell me a little bit more about that if you can.
Yeah. So when I was in Afghanistan during my last job, President Trump was like, hey, we're leaving. And we'd heard that so many times, so we didn't know if it was true or not. Right. So I started looking at my team, and I noticed that they were all trying to figure out something. So I had to express something that brought them all together. So I read this book on the love languages. And also, I was trying to figure out if the people in my life were the right people as I transitioned. Yes. Here's something that's very controversial. I'll share it with your audience too, is I realized at that time that my wife at the time was just not behind me, and she was not supportive. So I had a decision to make. And so all of my team and then my personal situation led me to this book by Chapman, and it's Five Love Languages. And how you express your love languages are how you like to be loved. And if you can figure out who you are like that and who other people are, you can communicate with them in a different way. So some people like gifts, like most people like gifts. The Bible would say that if you want to get into the courtship of kings and queens, even if you're not a believer, this is true. You can do it with gifts. So gifts is a love language. And then quality time. Like a lot of people like to be around other people who are of higher status because they want to learn from them personally. Some people are like, get those people away from me. I just want your acts of service, which is another. That's your third one. And then words of affirmation. Who doesn't like being told that they're doing a good job? And then the last one is physical touch. So some people like to come up and shake hands and then hold on to the hand. And you're like, this is getting awkward. Yeah. But you can tell right away when you meet somebody where they want to be communicating in, which bubble they want to live in. And that helps you communicate with them. And if you know your team's love language, not only can they tell their partners in life, and you'll know, and you'll be able to communicate with them. Hey, I was thinking about this and you need to spend some time with your family. So I'm going to give you some time off to spend some quality time with your family.
Yeah, and I can see now how those layer together. You're talking about this ability to understand whether they like data, whether they like the power or things like that. And then you can add layer on their love language. Mm-hmm. That can really make the communication a lot easier.
Oh, it makes a huge difference when people realize that I was talking to you like this. I thought you heard me, But now I realize that you're just not going to pay attention to those words because you want me to shake your hand and touch your arm or something like that before I open up to you.
Yeah, and you want me to come to you with facts instead of feelings. Or you want me to come to you with a game plan instead of facts or what you're going to do. I want, what are you going to do to get it done right now, this and that. Yeah. That's powerful. That's a good thought. One thing you mentioned earlier that I want to ask you about, because your book covered it too a little bit, this idea, you said a one-pager. So that immediately makes me think of the digital age.
Yes.
How are we navigating that? How do we get our organization to be productive in this digital age?
Yeah, I love tools. Right? Tools are not the answer. But if you can make something simple to where people can grab it, they will. But you have to make it easier for people to get it because the world is noisy right now. Super noisy. And the new oil is attention. And if you can't get their attention as a leader, you're not going to lead. So you have to have something so simple that they can grasp it right away. The one pager is where I went to from that book. It'll be in my next book, Start With Who, right? I'm going to put that one in my book and say, this is the easier way to do it because the world's so noisy. Big proponent of stoplight charts. I put that in that book in rule three. Monday.com is a good program management tool that does that. It says, here's the target, like whatever you're trying to hit. This is the person that's in charge of it. It's got a little picture of them. And then it has a bubble and it's three colors, red, green, or amber. And it has the percentage in there and people can grasp where they are. And that allows people who are normally micromanagers to be micro informed and maybe leave the team alone while they work because they see they're at like 80% and they're like, well, that's almost there. They're moving. And I love those tools where you can grab them and use them right away.
I have... My little sister works for one of the larger defense contracts, and they have that same kind of system, red, yellow, green. And she says that her point is that if you're in yellow, you're in trouble.
You need something. Yeah, for sure.
Because you got to be in green in order to know that you're going to make it. But if you're in yellow, you're closer going to red than green. I find that interesting. I find it scary because in order for that to happen, we really got to get on top of our data.
Yeah, data is huge right now.
And you talk about data and analytics, and I want to tie that with something else because I hear the negative side of this all the time. Yeah. But data analytics and artificial intelligence. You say that's how we're going to gain a competitive edge.
Competitive
advantage.
Yeah.
But being a writer of books, being a speaker, I hear so much about how artificial intelligence and paying attention to the data is not the way to go. Defend your thesis there. In what ways can we leverage those two things to really gain a competitive advantage?
Yeah, I'm going to merge them both. All right. So you have to use AI. It's mandatory now. It's just the new internet. So use it. I mean, authentic. What I'll do is I will take AI and use it as a personal assistant. The story I always tell really opened my eyes was I had an event to go to at a place in Las Vegas, Nevada. I had never really spent a lot of time trying to figure out Las Vegas because I don't live there. So I typed it into AI. How do I get to this event? What is the best parking situation? And they spit out this block. And this went into specifics. Go to the second floor, talk to the valet. The valet will have a couple spots available for you. If you give them $20, they'll park your car. And I'm like, $20? That's amazing. So I looked up Uber. I looked up Lyft. It would have cost me $50. And then I wouldn't have my car. And I'm like, I'm going to pay. Thank you, AI. And then I started using AI for everything. Now, as a writer and a speaker, I look for AI to provide me with real answers because AI is just like Google, except for it's not monetized yet. Meaning the advertisements aren't going into the data that you receive.
Exactly.
So if you ask it for an answer to a specific question and it's not ethical, it's going to tell you it's not ethical. Like you can't go and do something illegal. But what it will do is say, according to current data, these are the things that you need to look at. Then you can peer down into that and you maintain the authenticity without all the time churn that it used to take to get the same answers from an advertised Google. I'm not going down. I'm not digging on Google. Google's still great, but there's a lot of people paying to be at the top of your Google search. And that just hasn't happened in AI. So that's why I think it's an amazing time. But I'm a big proponent of data analytics. I'm a big proponent of artificial intelligence for helping people, not as a substitute for people. So my book has typos in it because I wrote it, not AI. wrote it. And so now when people are pointing it out, they're like, hey, you misspelled this word. I'm like, I sure did. AI did not. I wrote it. You can tell it's got a messed up word.
So. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that because we started, we can produce articles. My team can produce articles using AI. And the rule is AI can give you your first draft. But after that, you don't use AI for that. You use it strictly for research.
Yeah.
And people are starting to get there. But I cannot begin to tell you how many people are telling me, well, AI, no, that's the death of you. If you're using AI, you're taking short. I'm so tired of people being negative about AI. So I was really glad to read that in your book. Because that's what helps organizations. So I just want to dig a little deeper in that.
Yeah.
You combine data analytics and AI.
Yeah.
How do I get my company? How would you suggest, coach me again, on getting my company to become much more powerful and realistic in its decision-making process?
Yeah, that's good. The decision-making process should be fueled by data and information, right? Anytime you can get more data and information that's real or accurate, it's going to help you make better decisions. So if you're not using all the tools that you can to figure that out, then you're relying on somebody who may or may not be telling you the same information or even truthful information, because honestly, people don't like to be honest. They beat around the bush and they want to tell you something that's sugarcoated so that your feelings aren't hurt instead of the freaking truth. Like, you got to be real. And AI allows you to open the door a little bit more. One of the military stories I love to tell is about Patton. So Patton had the same problem, but it went through the wickets of the chain of command. So when he was at war, he would ask for updates and the generals would flow it through and they would say, here's your update. And he'd be like, that doesn't sound right. So he would get in a Jeep and he'd go down to the battleground and he'd get the truth. That's where the words ground truth come from. Yes. Patton came up with ground truth. So you should still be able to do that with people, but you can also see if it's just a little off just by asking AI the same question, because you're going to get an answer and then you have to formulate whether or not you believe what you're being told, or if it's just a little off, it's going to validate whatever you're feeling without going to someone to hurt their feelings, by the way. But more, it's better to be real.
What I notice and what you're saying, you can use all this and it comes back to, in a lot of ways, being accountable. You know, I preach accountability and I say accountability only starts with you. It starts with you. And you have to be able to tell your employees that they've done well or they've done wrong. And if you have data and analytics to do that and you've researched it, it makes a big difference, I think.
It does.
But when you're driving engagement and retention, based upon your expertise, what strategies have proven most effective?
Retention specifically is all about your ability to connect with others. If you're fake and you're about the money, they're going to see that real quick. And you're not going to retain people. You're actually going to chew them up and spit them out because people don't want to be around that. They don't want to be in a toxic environment. And when people can't move past people problems, that's all they talk about is people. So you don't progress as a company or an organization or a team. So you have to, must do the Maxwell approach, which is people don't care about how much until they know about how much you care. So retention specifically, I love talking retention because people usually like to be on winning teams until they find out the winning team is toxic. and then that winning team doesn't win too much longer anymore because the drain on toxicity goes away. And there's a place for toxicity, just not me. So I'm wearing this Captain Blackbeard flag on a hat that we're talking. And I recently learned that my lineage goes back to piracy out of Ireland after we gave up the throne. And I put a little red beard on here now, because now I'm wearing a red beard. I changed the flag, but I took something that was meant to be toxic and I made it not toxic. It's got a heart, it's got a red beard, and I'm trying to make sure that people don't bleed out. They don't bleed out on their team and they're looking for their inner treasure. So I'm probably going to brand this whole flag and I'm wearing it for the first time on your show. But that speaks to exactly what you're saying. You want to go ahead and be a captain, a Blackbeard, you're gonna drain your crew and they're going to leave. You might be famous, but you're not going to retain anybody who was there for you. And you're going to always be on the lookout for someone stabbing you in the back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, 360, look around. So what's going on. Yeah. Look around. But you mentioned, when you talked about that, the retention, and it still falls back on you, or on me, or whoever's the CEO of the organization, still falls back on them. Tell us about this idea of personal development for executive leaderships. I'm not so sure leaders, especially in the C-suite, feel like personal development is a value. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think when you hit the C-suite, and I've been there a couple times where I've been in these positions where you just don't have time for you. That's the hardest thing. And you have to carve out the time. There's lots of different ways you can do that. You can do time blocking. You can do personal. The 5 a.m. Club is a good book to read about how to put your time back into your life. And that's waking up before everyone else and doing things like that. But you have to, you must develop yourself. Most powerful CEOs in the world read a lot of books. They take in a lot of content. And if you're not doing that, then you're not following the success model that's already been set out in front of you. So I understand where they're coming from because they're busy. Everyone's busy and they don't have time for their family. You don't have time unless you make it. That's how time works. So you have to carve out that time for you. And if you're not doing it, don't expect your team to do it either because they're following your lead. So you as a CEO or whoever's as a CEO, if they're not showing on their calendar or showing to their team that they're developing themselves, then the company's not developing. There's no innovation there.
I'm going to share something just a little bit personal with you because here's what I discovered just, and this is why I ordered the books. I could get the book. You can always read books on, you know, on your Kindle. But when I like a book, or you should see my bookshelf in my library, it's the entire wall. And that's only half of the books that I have. But if I like something, I get the hard copy with it as well. But what I want to ask you about, because I have this book here, this is what I'm ordering, but you have books because one of our beliefs is that we want to create leaders that are going to make a multi-generational change.
Yeah.
I'm so attracted to the children's books that you're writing.
Yeah.
Tell me about those. That's just, you're creating leaders for the next generation and the next generation after that. Tell me about that. You have a very unique approach to it.
Yeah, I would love for people to join me on this journey too. That's why I'm putting that whole kit that I sell out for your audience. You have something to share with the world. It was something that was instilled in either your childhood or your experience. And whatever that lesson is, it needs to get out. Your story needs to be simplified to where a kid can understand it. And for me, on my journey, when I was writing this book, my son came up to me and he's, hey, how do I make money? I'm like, every billionaire's house that I've been to has written a book. And so you need to start there. And we started taking lessons out of this and making them for children. And so it's Kids Leadership Series. And the first one we published the next day, Glenn, the next day we were on the best-selling list. And I was like, what did we just do? I was like, I did not expect that. Yeah. But kids need leadership, and kids' leadership books was something that just resonated with people. I took that to the next step. I went, so the first book was the Fox in a Box. And it was written off of our little Shiba Inu that looks like a fox. And it's a question and answer session done through stories where it's a 5-minute read, can be done at bedtime. And then if you want, you can spend time with your kid to teach your kid your personal leadership lessons. There's questions at the end of the book where you can connect with your with the future leaders, man. So whether you're an auntie, an uncle, a grandma, grandpa, mom and dad, doesn't matter. Whatever leadership's stories that you have, you can convey them and they change over time. So the story changes with your story. And that resonated. So we did the next one and it came out higher. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And we changed some things into a 9-step process, which is the kit that I created. And we got to number one. And I was like, wow. So I tweaked some things. Then the next book we published broke Amazon. They had an out of stock thing for a month. So we came out number two. And I was like, let's not do that again. So we stopped at the four book series. I have the first one coming out in Spanish this year. Probably be out next month. And that's for my Spanish speaking friends, right? Because they're like, hey, I don't know any books there. When I grew up, I don't remember reading any Spanish books about leadership. And I'm like, well, I'll fix that. So we pushed that one over and that one's coming out soon. And I just got a note yesterday from a Hollywood executive that was like, hey, I want to make your kids book into a production. So let's talk. And I'm like, let's talk.
Yeah.
I would love for kids to grow up with leadership lessons. Like for me, the first one is don't quit. That's the fox in the box. Don't quit. A lot of people quit when it gets hard. Don't quit. And then you'll make it through. The second one, which is what they're looking at to make a movie, is mentorship. Find somebody that's been there, ask them for help. And a lot of times they'll give you help. And that's mentorship 101.
No, if I can interrupt, here's the big thing you just said, help. Ask people for help. The word help.
That is. Yeah.
That's huge. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that one hit. And then the third one that got us to number one was it's not what you say. It's also how you say it. And we've all heard that lesson, right?
We just talked about that lesson, right? The love languages, the anagrams. Yeah. We just talked about that language.
Yeah, it's speaking to people. And then the fourth one is the truth's always going to come out. So don't lie. My dad used to tell me, hey, never lie. Because when you do, you got to remember it. And it's just easier to tell the truth because you can always remember what you said.
Always remember what you said because it's the truth. And it's going to come out. It's going to come out. I'm sorry, people who have done some cheating and plagiarizing and things like that, it comes out. Maybe it's 20 years later, 25 years later.
It does.
You know, after you reach the pinnacle of your career, it comes out. You lose your job. You lose
crazy.
All faith. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to lose all the stuff that, it's, anyways.
You worked hard for it. You worked hard for it. So what I want to ask you, and this is one of those questions that I ask, I try to spring it on people as a surprise. No, I don't want to forget first. Tell us right now, what are you doing specifically? What are you doing to help people, to help leaders be better? You mentioned some things already, but I want you to tick them all for us. What are you doing right now to make a difference for leaders?
Yeah, I'm on this podcast campaign. I'm going to do 100 podcasts and then I might start my own. What I am doing is bringing leadership decision cycles like I just shared with your audience to a lot of different communities. So I just did one with my ex-community. I was on another show with a Navy SEAL and a Green Beret, and I was telling them about entrepreneurs and how they make decisions. Same cycle. I did the Chris Voss show. I'm doing the biggest shows that I can, like yours, to reach the biggest part of the audience that wants to help themselves. And those people are going to achieve greatness. So the podcast is one. The books, I am not trying to make money on books. I took 30 years of life lessons working around the most elite people I could be around, and I put them in a book you can pick up and read. So the next start with takes, and it makes it even better because you should only be focused on people as a leader. So I go into that great details, and I talk about my breathing exercises to help people. And then the third thing is I step on stages. I get on a lot of stages, and the stages are great for reaching people one time. Podcasts reach multiple and you can do it whenever you want. So I went off of stages and back into podcasts recently. So that's all happening. And then the third thing, I do master classes and coursework on not only who you are, but who your team is, and then how everybody folds into where you can find the other people who want to see you win. Because people want to see you win. And a lot of times you just have to open the door and say, hey, if you want to help, come on. And they're like, yeah, I was waiting for the invite. People want to be invited to the show. They don't just show up.
They do. Yeah. They do. So I'm going to pin you down just a bit more. So are you doing, you're not doing keynotes anymore, or would you do them? And if you're going to do them, how do people get a hold of you? And by the way, your answer is going to be in the description anyway. But do you do keynotes still?
Yeah, I still do some keynotes. Yeah, I have a couple speakers bureaus that I'm assigned to. I think the one that I just signed up for was International Professional Speakers Bureau. It's off of, is it called terrificspeakers.com? And then you can go and find my profile there. You can hire me there. You can hit me on my website and I'll assess to see if I want to send one of my proven leaders. Because I have proven expert speakers in my community that would love to come out and share their expertise on your leadership themed whatever, but my talk may not be the perfect thing for your theme. So I have a community of speakers that I often connect other promoters or event coordinators to. So I'll push my community out there, and they're all people like pro athletes, these people that have just had amazing lives, and they just want to step on stage and share their story. And it hits so hard that I'm like, can I introduce you to Lauren Keefe is a good example. She was in the Navy and then at the White House with me. And then she worked in PayPal, I think. She's been all over the globe. She has amazing stories. So if you want to talk leadership, I can give you a leadership finance person. I'm not a leadership finance person, but I know a leadership finance person specifically that can coach you through things because she's a certified coach. That's another thing I'll do. But yeah, podcasts are quick and easy, man. I share the same stories. And then depending on your, like for you, I shared like four different stories that I've never shared before.
And it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough, to be honest. Because, you talk about this as a tool, storytelling.
Yeah.
One thing about the limited time we have, and this is why sometimes we need 3, 4, 5 follow-ups, but just this idea of storytelling as a leader.
Yeah.
Considering the impact of your TEDx talk and your ability to tell stories like you just told with us and bringing leaders along, how important is that to teach to leadership about storytelling?
It's amazingly important. So people learn through stories. We, as a human society, push down knowledge through story. And then story went into plays and dances. And then those went into actual productions where we started to record everything in the written word. Then the Bible made books available. And then we're now at PowerPoint.
But we're past PowerPoint. We're now at AI. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. We don't have any AI conferences that are like all AI, thank God.
Really?
The storytelling is still, it's still deeply inside us to make sure that when it does become AI, that someone's guiding it the right direction. But people resonate with stories. People learn from stories. If you go to any huge school, like some of my professors in the Naval War College also taught at Harvard Business School, and they would tell things through story. They would show us lessons through movies. Like Undercover Billionaire. If you're an entrepreneur, watch Undercover Billionaire and you're going to find a lot of nuggets that no one's going to tell you about. If you take your pen and notepad, you're going to be able to pull a lot out of that. And that's something that I learned at an Ivy League school level. And I was like, wow, I should be doing this with everything.
Yeah. That's one of my weaknesses. I'm glad you called it out, Coach, because that's what I'm glad you called out, Alice. I called you my coach there, but I'm glad you called it out. That's one of my weaknesses because oftentimes I'm thinking, okay, I don't have time to look at this, look at that, even though I've created a list of the 50 best movies for that.
Yeah.
Now, you I've have. Seen them once, but I haven't gone through it and really dissected them like you just said.
You have 50? Did.
Yeah,
you have 50 movies?
A list of 50 movies that I think are motivational.
Oh man, I want that. I want that list.
Okay, I get it too. Just because it's easy to get to. Actually, since you mentioned it, we'll put it in that description too. But I'll get it to you personally so you can have it. It's just the idea of that. There's so many great stories in there, and inside of every movie, there's a great story behind it. You can find 4 or 5 stories, and I think that would help the learning process.
Yeah.
So just to wrap this line of question up, so you'll do a keynote if it's right for you.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of podcasts. You got your book out there. Is there anything else that you're doing to help today, help leaders today?
Yeah. So in my community in Phoenix, we have a lot of veteran-owned businesses, and I'm part of the Chamber of Commerce for that.
Okay.
And I'll help them with their messages and their stories, but I'll go into their businesses too and do a masterclass on targeting. So I have a course on targeting. Most people call it goals, but with goals, people miss the goal and they forget about it. It's like a New Year's resolution. The way I set it up is like a target. So if you put a target downrange and you're looking at the target and you miss it, you adjust until you hit it. And then you have the option. Do I want to put up another target or do I want to refine and go into the bullseye? And that actually produces progress and allows people to figure out what the actual mission is that they're trying to go after. Because everything's important. Until you put it into a targeting structure and you say, this, we're going to hit this. You won't really see progress in whatever it is that your priority is that you just haven't told anybody is a priority. I changed the model and I'm doing it with veteran-owned businesses here in Phoenix. And I do a lot of that here, but I'll travel. I have people that are certified in John Maxwell leadership. I have people that are certified in Myers-Briggs. If you're in personality tests, that if you want that, I usually send those people out because they're certified with all the stuff that I teach.
Okay. All right. And I want to be respectful for everybody's time. We've gone a little bit over and still got a bit more to go because here's my next question for you. What question should I have asked you that I did not ask you?
Yeah, everyone has an origin story, like the reason that they started their company. And that's always very compelling because people, somebody's thinking of starting a company right now and they need to hear someone's story of why their company started to kick them in the pants and get them on the journey. Here's my story.
Okay.
I was in a ton of leadership courses and none of them really hit the mark. Everyone will teach you how to be a beginning leader. Then after that, it's up to you to find somebody that's going to help you. And not everyone's going to share their secrets. And for me to open up the door to a lot of winning secrets that I've compiled, I've been chastised for it because they don't like it whenever I share community secrets. Hey, you know what? When you're in the special operations community, when you're on a lead team, we look at who you are as a whole person before we bring you onto the team. And for me, seeing that and then not sharing it with everyone who maybe want to win, because that's why we win. We focus on the person first. It was hard for me to just let that go and just be like, I could start a company and get people to figure out who they are and then watch them succeed at great levels. And I don't know if you get like reviews on your book, Glenn, where people are like, this changed my life. But my heart freaking goes out every time I read something where my work that I did one time helped change somebody's trajectory. And change their attitude, right? Because like I said before, your attitude determines your altitude. You can go as high as you want and it's all starting in your head. So
that's 6 inches.
That's 6 inches that between your ears is the most important 6 inches that you have in your lifespan. So that span ain't changing. What are you doing with it for the rest of the span of your life?
You know what? I was going to ask you about that, but coming a little sidetracked, because you do say that. Your attitude determines your altitude. Mm-hmm. And you look at, I always put it together to see what's going on inside my head, because I heard on a TV show once about how the guy said that was the difference between me becoming president and you not. It's just six inches. It's just inches here.
Yeah.
And you talk about people developing expertise, and you talk about your origin story is unique because you really come down to the truth of it. It's not just one thing. It's a balancing act, and it'll slowly start to tilt the more you start to allow your attitude to rise.
Yes.
That's powerful. I got to tell you, I wish we had a lot more time. You've been one of the best guests we've had. That's going to happen when you have someone who's written the amount of books that you have that are helping people and who had the life experience that you have that are helping people. You do walk your talk. Very few things you taught us today without telling us a story.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything you didn't tell us that was without telling the story. But that's what makes it good.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what makes it good. So that's what makes it good. I'm going to ask you for your final words. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with your audience?
Yeah. A lot of people are afraid of themselves. They won't get out of their own way. And if you're one of those people that thinks you can't, you're wrong. It's something that's inside of you that needs to be shared. And if you go to the grave with whatever it is that you're holding, you're doing us all a disservice, and you're not being yourself if you're holding it back from the rest of us. So please share whatever it is that you've got, your passion, with more people so that they can be passionate with you. There are people like you that need you. Please go tell them your story. It's masterful and powerful in more ways than one until it gets out. You just are going to hold on to it with regret.
There's the lesson I'm going to write about that you just taught me. I hope everybody gets a chance. I'm going to follow it up because what you just got through saying is important. There's people out there who need to hear your story.
Yes.
And that's the only way you and I get stuff in our books. People saying, geez, that changed my entire life. I hadn't thought about it that way before. It changed my entire life. That's the only way it happens. Thank you very much. You got me on that last one. You touched me a little bit. So I thank you very much for that. For the audience, check the descriptions. You'll see everything that Alice promised you. It'll be right there. So you can just click on the link and go. All right. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you for watching this presentation from Touchstone Publishers. Please subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new episodes are published.